Hello, my name is Sarah, and this is The Suplex. Welcome to another edition of the Suplex Podcast. I am your host, Sarah, and I hope you're all having a great week. Now, I don't know about you, but I have been very excited because since the last time I've spoken to you all, I have done not one, not two, not three, but four wrestling shows. And oh my God, it feels great to be back. There are so many shows now happening up and down the country, and I am pleased to announce that people are being careful and cautious about COVID. It's a horrible thing, COVID, but we're all testing. We're all making sure we're all clean. And I hope anybody who's listening to this who's thinking of attending is doing the same thing. Get out there. Go see some shows. If you feel comfortable. If you don't, there is no pressure on you to attend. Now, my guest this week is a young chap by the name of Jordan Saeed. Now, as I mentioned last week with Ross, those two have been tagging up. And Jordan's had a bit of an interesting journey into being a wrestler. He tried it and then decided to go off into another career. We'll find out more about that in this episode. But sit back, relax, grab your cup of tea, grab your coffee, your energy drink, your Diet Coke, whatever you are drinking. And I hope you're getting comfortable and listening to another edition of the Suplex Podcast. Enjoy. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of the Suplex Podcast. My guest here today, we spoke to his tag team partner last week, and he is now here with us today. That is Mr. Jordan Saeed. Jordan, how are you, my friend?
Hello, how are we?
I'm good, my friend, I'm good. How's life treating you? How's things?
Busy. I just done a... It seemed as though when everything opened back up, it didn't like slowly drip feed. It kind of opened up at once. Like, you know, life comes at you fast. So it was one of them. So I just wrestled like seven shows in 9 days. Wow. When wrestling come back, I said to myself, let me go in easily. And then it just kind of all piled up. And then I got back to the UK and it's straight into the shoot job and straight into more wrestling tomorrow. So... Rah. They say, like, no rest for the wicked. I'm loving it, though. I'm not, like, no complaints. I love being busy. It stops me snacking as well.
Mate, I am insanely jealous. I have not gone back to a show yet. I am gutted and jealous of you. You know, I'm like, oh, man, just one. I would have loved one.
I'm sure it'll come at some point. I think at the moment there's a lot of... not all promotions, but for some, there's a bit of a easing back into it now. I don't think they're sure of I'm not sure some promotions even know what they're doing at the moment because of COVID and restrictions and all this other logistical stuff like talent is very confusing for people. Mm. Some people are going to hit the ground running, others it might be like, again, a drip feed process.
Mm-mm. So you briefly mentioned the shoot job. Has that been treating you during COVID and all that? How's it been going?
I had to work from home because I kind of manage my own charity for people with mental health and learning difficulties and homeless. Mm. So I stayed because we didn't have like an actual key to our building because we rent an office space. We had to work from home. So during the whole of lockdown, I come up with my own project where I was just going out and getting all the food from like, because obviously a lot of small businesses struggled during the lockdown, especially like small restaurants and small takeouts. So I was just buying their leftover food that they wouldn't sell that day. And I'd just go around giving it to the homeless. So that was a nice little project I was able to do during lockdown. Mm. But now it's back into the office. So it's all good. It's slowly getting there. Not busy. I think there's a few people, the people I deal with are very, are still classed as vulnerable. So a few of them are scared to go out. Mm. But I'm sure it'll get back to normal very soon.
Well, that's excellent to hear that that's how that's going, and that's going well for you. That's brilliant. Awesome news. Awesome.
Thank you.
That's fantastic. So tell me, I ask this question for everybody because I always wonder, because we're all different ages and stuff like that and from different backgrounds, I always wonder how people get into this wonderful world that is wrestling. So what was it that attracted you to wrestling? What got you hooked?
I just used to watch it. Like, I think everyone as a kid watched it on TV. Every kid, even if you like don't watch it when you're older, every kid used to watch it because it was really just fighting. You're just watching these huge, larger-than-life people which look like action figures just fighting, and obviously the storyline. So you end up watching it. So I end up watching it since I was like four. So I'm 26 now. So I remember I called the last days of ECW. And I called the last days of the Attitude Era. I think I remember the first thing I'd watched, and I can't remember the year it was. I remember Kurt Angle putting Shane McMahon through the glass stage at King of the Ring. I can't remember the year it was. It might have been early 2000s or 90s. I can't remember.
99, I vaguely remember it.
Oh, yeah, so that was it. So I was able to catch that, and I used to buy all the VHS tapes from the post office to watch ECW and that. So I was hooked on it as a kid. And then I kind of stopped watching around 2011, I think I stopped watching. I don't know why. I think every wrestling fan, wrestling, you know, employee goes through a phase where they just stop watching, and I stopped watching. And I can't remember what happened. I can't remember whether it was a clip I watched or something. It was around 2014. I just thought, you know what, I'm gonna train to be a wrestler. So I started training, but then because at the time of training, it might have been 2014, I'm getting my dates wrong. I was actually training at the time to be a police officer as well. And because I was dedicating so much time to wrestling, I was kind of flunking my police exam. So I thought, you know what, I've got to be sensible about this. So I stopped wrestling training and joined the police. I'd then done a few years there. And I kind of like, I remember like I was doing long hours, long shifts. And I thought, you know what, like I think at the moment, this isn't right for me. It was like a full circle. I stopped training wrestling to be wise and become a police officer. Mm-hmm. But then I decided to leave the police and be a wrestler. So it was like, Jesus Christ, like, what am I doing? No regrets, obviously.
No.
And I was pretty young at the time, you know, no mortgage, no wife, no kids. So it wasn't like, if I made a choice like that, in that situation, it would have been terrible. But a young 21-year-old with no commitments can barely tie shoelaces. I was able to do that. So I just got back to training and ended up making my debut. And yeah, here we are.
Excellent. Excellent stuff. Why the police? I have to ask. Like, that just sounds like, especially in comparison to what you're doing now, sort of thing. It's just like, seems pretty chalk and cheese, you know.
I'm going to be honest. I watched a lot of Law and Order Special Victims Unit and I got pretty hooked on it.
That's such an underrated show. That is such a show.
Underrated. Very underrated. It's like not many. I don't know why it's not like up there, but yeah, I just got hooked on that. And I thought, and at the time I was like, I think I was 17 or early 18 when I applied, like actually sent my application. And I wasn't a troublemaker by any means, but I wasn't really, I was kind of going out all the time, you know, on the, no responsibility, kind of on the verge of, you know, I wouldn't say self-destruction. So I just needed something to give me a bit of a kick up the arse. Sorry, are we allowed to say?
Yeah, we can swear.
I needed something to give me a bit of a kick up the arse. You know, and then that was it. I joined and it was a long process and it was very fun. But I got kind of depressed in the job and I realized that it wasn't for me. And there was a lot to life that I wanted to learn and want to experience before I took on that much responsibility.
Yeah. It must be such a, as a job, it must be very intense. Like, I knew someone who used to work with my firm, and then they had their name on the whole time they were working for us with the police force, and they ended up going in. I don't know how they're feeling about it now, per se. I know I did have a message a little while ago turning around and saying, is there any jobs at your place? So I can't.
Yeah, it's a very, it's intense. It's like a, sorry to cut you off. It's a very, I think it's a great career. I think it's one of the best careers in the world. They look after you. They're very good people. And they're, whenever you're going through like shit or like mentally you're not doing well, they do look after you. That's what that was from my experience. Good benefits as well. Very good benefits. But it's one of them jobs, like, once you're in, you're kind of in. Your life will turn into policing. Like, the amount of times I was, like, I would, like, when I was off duty, go to, like, meet someone for a drink or something, and I'd see something happening, and I'd have to get involved. Like, you couldn't switch off.
God.
You were always thinking about policing. Like, the programs you watched were policing, the movies you're done with policing. Every conversation was about policing, and it kind of takes over your life, almost.
But at least now we can enjoy law and order and not have to worry about policing. That's a benefit of it, I suppose.
Yeah, because you end up watching the programs and driving yourself insane, going, hang on, that's not real life. Well, what's he doing?
Brilliant stuff. Excellent stuff. So you said you started training. Where did you go? Who was your first trainer? And what did you think the second you walked back through the door? It's the first time before you came back.
Yeah, so the very first time, which was about 2014, I only trained a couple of months. I trained under John Ritchie of Dropkick Wrestling. Very good, very, very good coach. And there was a lot of good guys there who were very experienced. I remember actually I bumped into, you know, Lewis Howley, who signed.
Yeah.
He was from Dropkicks, and I bumped into him a lot. And at the time when I was there, everyone was like, wow, Howley's amazing. Howley's this. He's the guy you want to be like. And obviously it's true now, let's be honest. And then when I left, I then went back to Dropkicks, because I remember I kind of Googled our wrestling training schools. And back around the 2013 to 2014 time, Dropkicks was one of them. I think the Projo was had just started. I can't remember. And you had obviously LDN, but for some reason I'd seen that Nick Aldis and Wade Barrett had come through Dropkicks, and I thought, let me give that a go. It could very well be my style. So I trained there. Obviously I left, went to the police, come back, and I thought, you know what, when I did go back to training, I was actually still in the police. I was still doing shifts. I remember one of my first sessions, I'd done like a 14-hour shift, took in 2 hours of sleep, jumped on a train. I went straight to training to Dropkicks. And it was like, I remember there was a ring session as well and a show. And I remember I'm sat there running off caffeine and lack of sleep. And I'm watching the show and I'm thinking, yep, this is something I definitely want to do. And yeah, it was a fun experience. I learned, you know, obviously I learned the fundamentals and the basics at Dropkicks, and I got good experience being on shows and all that other stuff, because it's a very academy. Obviously, that's no disrespect to Dropkicks. It's an academy show, where it's like the main fundamentals are is where they use people from their training school. So I was able to, you know, get some good singles matches and good experience in front of a crowd.
Awesome. That's awesome.
And that was around, I made my debut around, was it 2018? It might have been 2018, or late 2017 or early 2018. I can't remember the top of my head, honestly. Because I remember when I made my debut, I was doing a few like run-ins. I never actually had a physical match. I was just jumping people. So in terms of actual debut in the ring, wrestling someone, it must have been about, I'd say, yeah, early 2018, I think. But I could be wrong. I could be like, my head could be completely beyond me.
No, that's cool, my friend. That's cool. So I've seen bits of Dropkicks over the years, you know, that they're very for your mat based and your ground based work. They do very, very good in terms of choosing your fundamentals, like getting your fundamentals and grounding on that. As you said, Nick Aldis has come through there. Lewis Howley came through there. He's a very early days Playboy Lewis Howley gimmick. That's a shirt. I can tell you that. For
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, the Playboy Lewis Howley's going to hate me for saying it, but I don't care. But, you know, it's definitely a good starting school, definitely. I don't mean that with any disrespect for anybody at Dropkicks at all, but very, very decent training school there. So what, once you made your start, did you, once you moved on from Dropkicks, did you train anywhere else? Like what was what were you thinking when you were like choosing your next move in wrestling and choosing like your next school? Like, what were you looking for?
Well, I'd done a few shows for Dropkicks. And the ironic thing is I lived, and I still do at the moment, I live like 3 minutes from the Resistance Gallery in Bethnal Green. And I can't remember why. I think after like a year and a half, I'm like, well, why don't I give that school that's around the corner a go? That would be very, you know, logical. So I started going to Lucha for a few months and getting onto their shows and doing a bit more networking, because obviously they're right in the heart of London, and I was able to go to, I remember there was like a lot of promotions that ran at the Res Gal. So I met a lot of people. And obviously I picked up a lot more experience being on shows in the Res Gal. And then when I started working for WrestleForce a lot more, I met a few like coaches and trainees from like Knuckle Locks School of Wrestling. Mm-hmm. And then I just decided, oh, you know what, like I think Knuckle Locks is a good school for me. I'm getting a lot more feedback. I'm able to learn a lot more. So I end up just training at Knuckle Locks a lot of the time too. And technically, I know obviously lockdown life and COVID world, I'd probably say I still am training at Knuckle Locks. It hasn't been open since obviously the start of COVID, but if I had to say that was a training school I'd attach myself to, it'd probably be Knuckle Locks. I haven't trained at Lucha in probably a good, before the pandemic, so I think the pandemic started in March. I think my last training session there might have been February 2019 or January 2019. And then I made the move to Knuckle Locks. And then they kind of had a temporary home in the Resistance Gallery, if you remember. They were based in. So I still went there. And then when they finally found a new venue, I did go back to Knuckle Locks as it was.
Yeah. So I remember Knuckle Locks. They moved around. Obviously, I remember one of the last shows I did was the fundraising one for them, because they're obviously looking for new premises, obviously, before the pandemic also hit, which was, that was good. That was good. And obviously, that's a very, I know they've been doing some like online courses as well. So if anyone listening wants to sort of get themselves checked in, I know they've been doing some online sessions as well, which are available with Dave Francisco, and obviously they're looking to get their new premises up and running soon with very, very good peeps that are running that now and looking after that, the lads in the NIC and their family also all interlinked with that, with Dave Francisco. So go check them out, definitely, guys, if you are looking for a school, Knuckle Locks. And we wait and see what happens to the Resistance Gallery, because that's all closed now.
Yeah, it's gone. I'm actually kind of gutted about it, because it was one of the few shows I could like drag myself out of bed for and just walk. And also, like, it was very good because I could bring, like, there was a lot of people I was able to bring because of the local area, and I didn't have to worry about like getting home. I could literally just like stay for a drink after with people and just, you know, like I was just able to go and focus on wrestling, and also help, like the ring was set up and whatnot. I'll miss the Res Gal. I really would. I really will.
I really miss the Res Gal. As a venue, I do really miss the Res Gal, but at the end of the day, the Res Gal was the Res Gal, and,
Yeah.
In post-COVID times, I'm not sure as a venue it was.
I think COVID was created in there, to be honest. I think that was where it originated.
Everyone's saying it's a lab in China. Nope, it was at the Resistance Gallery in Bethnal Green.
Exactly that.
Oh, bless. That venue. It needed a deep clean, but I think I love that venue. I met Tony Khan in that venue, which is hilarious.
Oh, really?
Of all the places to meet Tony Khan, it was in the Resistance, Gary. We had a show there, IPW show, because it was at the time where everybody was using the Resgal. We even used the Resgal IPW, and it was Kip Sabian versus MJF at the Resgal. And Tony Khan turned up to check out MJF versus Kip Sabian at the Resgal, and we just had to keep apologising to go, this is not our usual venue. This is not our usual venue. We're normally in like 600, 800 seater in Maidstone. This is not our usual venue. But he comes straight from a Fulham match, of course, straight to the Resgal.
Oh, yeah, of course. I forget he owns Fulham. Very mad, yeah.
Literally rocked up in his Fulham scarf and everything. It was brilliant. I was just like, oh my God, of all the places to meet Tony Khan, it's here.
Yeah, it was kind of cool because, like, I remember I'd meet, like, me, I was very green. I still am green, I'm going to be honest, but, like, I was still green then. And, like, there was a lot of cool people I bumped into. Like, I remember MVP just casually walked in and I'm like, mate, I watched you on TV and, like, you're stood here talking to me. Like, that's pretty cool. Obviously, you get a lot of the imports coming in for the Resgal as well, which was nice. I remember, there's a Japanese wrestler, Emi, I can't pronounce her last name.
Emi Sakura.
Yeah, and I think I made a bit of a bad impression with her because I remember I was very, like, nervous. I knew she was a big name, and I was very nervous. And I, you know, like, as you walk in, you kind of greet everyone. But I knew she was this very high prestige, well-known Japanese wrestler. And I remember I walked up to her. I kind of made eye contact with her. Weren't too sure whether to go for a handshake or go for a hug. So I kind of, like, full-on bowed down to her. and she kind of looked at me like, I can't remember who she was stood next to. Like, the person looked at me like, no, Jordan, no. And but then, bless her, she done it back. But she must have thought, who the fuck was that weird? I'm like,
oh, Jordan has heat with Emi Sakura, front page of the Daily Rag. I love it.
Oh, man.
Fantastic. Emmy's
best. If she ever gets asked about the most awkward wrestling encounter, it's definitely going to be that. Like,
fantastic. Oh, bless you. Awesome. So obviously from your training in knuckle locks and your training from drop kicks, you've obviously, just before this wonderful pandemic that we've just had, you notice the sarcasm in my voice, things were sort of really starting to sort of pick up for you. Now, obviously, Battle Pro is unfortunately no more, but you yourself and RJ Singh were tag teaming in there, and I noticed that you guys are starting to bring that on the road a little bit and, you know, get a good partnership going on there. For those who can't see a video of this, but let me put it this way, this is how good this is sort of going to get as a tag team, so watch out, is Jordan's actually turned up into the Zoom chat as RJ's nephew. So Uncle RJ's looking after the next generation people. So how did that, from your perspective, come about? And what do you feel? How do you feel about tagging with someone like RJ?
Yeah, so with RJ, I remember I was working at WrestleFall show, and the then owner of Battle Pro was there, and I asked if he could just watch my match and give me a bit of feedback. But I didn't actually know he ran Battle Pro. But I knew he was a coach at another school. So, you know, trying to obviously get better and improve, as we all do. Afterwards, he gives me feedback, and then he booked me on the show. It was like a show in Caterham, as they pronounce it. And then I wrestled a good match. Got a good reception, showed up on time, helped with the ring, all that stuff. But I just felt like, okay, it was a case of what do we do with Jordan now? And then obviously we've got We've got RJ Singh, who's very, very experienced, very good at what he does, very known in the London scene. And then we've got Jordan, who's not very known in the London scene, looking to learn. And the idea was just like, I can team with RJ. I can be his bodyguard, almost his muscle, but I can also learn and develop from any of the weak points in my game. He can cover any, I'm not saying he has weak points because he's good, but like any of the flaws in RJ's game, I can cover. And it kind of like, I remember when it was said, oh, you're going to like team with RJ. It was pretty cool because do you remember like the wrestling channel 427? I used to watch a lot of FWA on there. So being able to like team with RJ was like, oh man, this is dank. Like, and then, yeah, it started off with a few run-ins on shows, me like helping them out. And then we started tag teaming a lot more. And, you know, I've had a lot of fun with it because I've learned so much teaming with RJ. And yeah, like I can't wait to get back teaming with him. We're going to be teaming together for Purpose Wrestling. It's a new promotion based in South Wimbledon. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be pretty cool, and we're hoping to like get out there a bit more in terms of tag teaming. But again, it's still early days. As much as we're pushing it, it's not, you know, we're patient. I'm patient as well.
Yeah, that's cool. That is cool. Name a nugget of advice that RJ has passed on to you that you'd like.
I wouldn't even say the advice he's given me. It's more stuff I've learned almost like just certain things. Like when I'd be on the apron, I'd be watching like the way he would be giving heat, like, and I'm like, man, I need to do that a bit more often. And also just with how like confident he is in the ring and in himself, and me, like I can kind of take that, you know. Kind of one thing I've learned is that if you don't have confidence, fake it. So if I can like fake RJ's confidence, it'd really help me. It's less about advice he's passed, more of stuff I've just seen him do and learn.
That's awesome, man. So you mentioned it at the top of the show, but I'm going to bring into it again that you've managed to go on your travels a little bit with in your young time and young wrestling career. You've been over in Italy.
Yeah.
And you've just come back with a bit of a coup over there with one of their championships, their cups. Tell us a little bit more about that. And IWA. IWA. Sorry.
Italian Wrestling Association. So they had this international tournament. And it the idea's been there for a very, very long time. I'm talking about, I think, about a year of planning had gone into it. Because I remember there was this time where like last year during the summer, COVID was really, really improving. And there was an announcement of a vaccine. So we kind of thought we had hit home run until obviously we had like a second and third wave, but there was a lot of planning into this Nations Cup. And he asked, you know, I was asked to do it and I said, yeah, sure. Like it's like July, 2021, you know, travel should be okay by then. It's not like, you know, I have high hopes it'll be good. But then it got to about March this year, and I think we kind of just said, look, with the way the world's going, with these variants and travel restrictions, I just don't think it won't be possible. So we kind of closed the deal on it. And then I remember when it was only recently Boris Johnson made the announcement that those who are double vaxxed don't need to quarantine from amber list countries. So I messaged the promoter, I said, look, like I'm available now. You know, if there's a spot on the show, great, I'll happily do it. If not, man, I'll just come down to the show and watch some wrestling. He said, yo, there's a spot on the show. We've got it, it's all good. And then, we just kind of done it from there. Like it just... Like I always kind of had it in my diary that, okay, just in case. Yeah. I really had no hope it was ever going to happen, to be honest. I just kind of accepted like, okay, it's in the diary, but it won't happen. And then when that announcement got made, it was like, yep, I'm definitely coming. Let's get this done. It was a 3-day event. It was a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And there was people from like there was people advertised from all over, like Enda Kara, who's actually done a bit of work in the UK. He's worked for WXW. We got Karim Brigante, who's actually been on Battle Pro and worked in England, been on WXW, the NWA. We had the Rotation advertised as well. He's the head coach from WXW. So there was a lot of international flavor to the whole thing. And it was really brutal. It was like, I wrestled four matches over 3 days, but obviously coming back into that from a year break almost, well, wasn't a year break. My last show before that was last September. So it was kind of a year, but it wasn't at the same time. And also the heat, with the heat as well, because wrestling in a foreign country where it's humid for us Britons isn't really, ideal. So it was a very, very brutal event, but then I ended up winning it. And the trophy's massive. Like, I was scared I couldn't get through customs. I somehow did. Literally, like, when I've arrived to the venue, I've seen the trophy and I'm like, Jesus, like, this is like, if it gets through customs, if they don't stop me, they might, oh God, just knock something over. They might like confiscate it. I don't know.
And this is the Nations Cup that you ended up winning.
Yeah, this is the Nations Cup I ended up winning. So yeah, that was kind of cool. And then I come back. I thought, let me have a few days after in Rome just to mess around and have fun. Mm-hmm. I come back on a Wednesday, rested a bit, and then the next day was a 4-day tour of WrestleVolve. So within 9 days, it was about 7 shows. And how many matches did I have? I had about 10 matches, I think. So it was very brutal, but it was fun. It wasn't far off the schedule I had pre-pandemic, because pre-pandemic I wouldn't say it was as similar to that, but I was geared up enough for it. I was prepared enough for it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like, literally, I can imagine it was getting to sort of every weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, without even thinking about it. And
I think in 2019, I counted this not long ago. It was about 98 or 97. I wrestled about 97 or 98 times in 2019. It got to 2020, and until obviously the start of the year, till March, when the pandemic was officially declared, I think it was about 20 times I'd wrestled.
Wow. Good effort.
So, yeah, I was very, very busy from that time.
Definitely, man. And
during the pandemic,
No, go on, mate, go on.
Yeah, during the pandemic, I only wrestled abroad, which was nice.
I find that hilarious in the same breath that you managed to wrestle abroad during the pandemic rather than within this country, which I find hilarious. The simple fact of life.
Yeah, I kind of needed it because, not that I'm a name or anything, but like, I felt like in the UK, I didn't know why I was putting on matches. It was like, I felt like a lot of the shows I was a regular on, I was getting a reaction purely because people knew me in the audience. And when I got onto a more like independent, like an indie crowd, I felt I was very reliant on RJ to get a reaction, or when I was on my own, I was very nervous. And I just thought, okay, what am I doing? Why am I wrestling? So I kind of needed to like get a bit of a fresh start and wrestle abroad during the pandemic, you know, kind of like go somewhere where no one knows your name, knows your business, and start from fresh. Mm-hmm. And then I noticed when I come back and done the 4 days of WrestleVolve, a few people said, wow, you look a lot more confident in the ring, which is good. You know, I needed it. I needed to like start from scratch and start fresh and try new things.
Excellent stuff. And I speaking of new things, I'm going to link to this man's Twitter and everything on the show notes, which I always do, guys. But when you get onto Jordan's Twitter, this man must, as you said yourself in your own tweet, You have balls the size of grapefruits to cut a promo in the Vatican.
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
Bruh, seriously, how did you get away without getting arrested for that?
I don't know how I did. Me and the person I was with, we kind of walked in. I said, you know, I need to cut a promo. Like, we can only try. The worst thing, they can just tell me, like, can you not do it? But I again, you don't know what police in another country are like. Mm. So we kind of done it in two takes. I just said, look, take the camera. We'll pretend we're taking pictures for social media. Mm. If they see me talking, I'll just say I'm on a Zoom call, which I don't know how... whether they would have believed that or like, I also done a, where else did I do a promo? I done a promo in front of the Coliseum, which was pretty cool. Yeah. Like I like kind of doing that, like going to landmarks and doing promos. I think it gives it a bit more zest to your material rather than, you know, your bedroom wall or a backdrop in a street, you know, like it just gives it a bit more, wow, this guy's willing to get borderline arrested for a promotion, you know.
I love it though. It's so cool. I do love that. You're right though, because I do get a bit bored of playing backgrounds promos, and like, don't get me wrong, like I'm filming this in a bedroom, but like I could jazz it up. I could put a bookshelf behind me to make me look sophisticated. I'm in a big desk chair, so I look important. You know, it's pepping up your promos, shall we say. And like, man, I think you've taken the biscuit with going for the Vatican and the Colosseum.
Yeah, I just thought, you know what, like, if I'm going to go down, I'm going to go down swinging. Like, at least I tried. I remember I told the promoter, and he said it was a good idea. He loved it. So... we done it in the end. And I thought, you know, if I do it tonight, my flight's tomorrow. So at least I don't have to hide for too long if police are after me. Because I don't think anyone's ever done that, a promo in front of the Vatican. I'm going to go out on the limb and say that's the most religious place in the world. So it was pretty like looking back, like at the time, it was a good idea. Looking back on it, it was a bit nuts.
That's mental. I love it. Absolutely love it, mate. Absolutely love it. So what's your hopes and desires for 2021 for wrestling?
At the moment, I haven't actually thought that much into it. At the moment, short-term goal is getting back into the swing of it and having some good matches and see it, you know, kind of start as I mean to go on. Also, like, I do want to go back abroad. I've got a book in Spain coming up for AWZ Wrestling. I don't know when that is. It's all dependent on restrictions and whatnot. I'm heading back to the IWA, I think, later this year, which is good. At the moment, I just want to see kind of where it takes me. A goal of mine is to go to Germany for a few months to train at WXW. And see if I can, like, not only learn, but see what I have to offer as well. At the moment, I'm just taking it as it comes. But those are a few things on my mind in terms of what I could have penciled in the future.
That's awesome. I know a lot of people have gone over the WXW in the past just to do their training. Like Sky Smithson, for example, perfect example. And the amount you learn and the fact you're able to engross yourself in wrestling, not quite like a Japanese dojo, but similar vein, like you live, breathe, sleep wrestling for a few months on end, like you can't help but improve from doing that.
Exactly. That's why I'm going out there, you know. I know where it is, but I'm looking to like rent an apartment out there and just stay there for a few months and just see what happens, you know. Like, you know, you never, in life, you don't win or lose, you win or learn. So, you know, that's what I'm hoping to do. I'm hoping to learn and hopefully win. So.
Awesome. I'm going to mention one thing before we wrap up. Football.
Yes.
Yeah, man, our man here is a Hammers fan from being obviously from the east of London, cool. West Ham United, and obviously my favourite wrestler of all time, probably Mr. Triple H himself, has declared himself a West Ham fan.
Yeah, he's a bit, I didn't actually know, like, I know, like, he's always done the Hammers sign, but I didn't realise he was that invested into West Ham. It's actually pretty crazy.
It's hilarious.
A few big name wrestlers, like, I know Ric Flair is, Kurt Angle, who else is there? I think Kofi Kingston. There's a few people who love West Ham, and I ain't got a clue why. It's actually crazy. We've got, like, lots of supporters in different countries. There's almost like a cult following for us because of the movie Green Street.
Has to be. Has to be linked, definitely. But I just find it hilarious of all the... At least we can say he's not a glory hunter. Do you know what I mean? Like, no offence to West Ham. You did pretty well last season. But still, in the same breath, you know, he didn't just turn around and go, right, Man City, Man United, sort of Liverpool sort of era. You know, but he's like, I find it quite funny. I do find it quite funny. And I will mention one thing. I tell you now, wrestling is definitely becoming, well, it's still quite mainstream. And I find it hilarious that the DJ at Arsenal, being a gooner myself, the DJ at Arsenal is a mad wrestling fan, as is a Bamiyang, apparently is a bit of a closet wrestling fan as well. And... hearing Triple H's entrance music as the players are coming out after halftime, I found brilliant.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's pretty, like, I see that and I was like, man, I think a lot of people pop for that. My dream is just to, like, go to the London Stadium and see Triple H dishing out pedigrees or buying a club. I'd be on cloud nine.
Oh, mate.
Triple halftime team talks. If he bought West Ham. We're losing, like, Jesus Christ.
Couple of slaps. He'd be absolutely, sort it out. Oh, can you imagine it now, Trip, like, we can put you in touch with, like, Karen Brady and we'll get something sorted out, man. You know, by West Ham. It would be brilliant. It would just be hilarious.
Yeah, like, we need new owners.
Oh, dear. Oh, that's fantastic. And... for someone who's, I know you're quite young on your journey, what's the one piece of advice you would give anybody listening to this who's thinking about starting out and is not too sure about giving it a go? What piece of advice would you give them?
Oh, just do it. Like, I can't, there's no other way to, like, if, like, I'm trying to think, like, if I was, I've never actually thought about that. One piece of advice I would give a trainee, because it would probably be, if you're really considering it, you just have to do it. Like, there's no, like, you know, it's not about, like, just go for it, you know. Worst thing in the world that can happen is that you don't like it and you leave. Like, you know what, like, at least in at least when you're 70 or 80 and you're, you know, you're kind of all, you know, you're not able to function as much as you used to, you know, at least you can look back and go, yeah, you know what, at least I tried. That was kind of the one thing that motivated me to get into wrestling. I thought, I don't want it to be too late, because there is no such thing as too late in wrestling, as we all know. People start different ages, but I don't want to get to the age where, like, I can barely function and all of a sudden, like, I'm just looking back going, fuck yeah, no, it is too late. Like, I wish I'd given it a go. And what could have been, because it's always the what ifs in life. Should have happened. What if? They're the things that eat you up, the hope. So you just got to go for it. You just need to, in terms of, like, actually training, hit the gym, control your diet a bit more, because, well, as much as talent can get you far, people do admire it when you put, you know, a lot of effort into your physique and also your fitness. You don't really, I know guys who are, like, in really, really good shape, but in terms of, like, actual physical fitness, they just, they get very easy. You know, we have to look after each other and we have to be athletes. You know, you don't need to be like Usain Bolt, but you know, you want to be somewhat of an athlete. Even if you're not doing this full time, you just want to train and work hard, and also just be open to listening, because a lot of people, not everyone will like your stuff. There's no such thing in wrestling. Everyone has flaws. Be open to getting criticized. And if you can't take criticism, you're really going to struggle.
Yeah, definitely. You're in the wrong job if you can't take criticism. 100%. 100%. Jordan, my friend, now it's time to shill yourself. Where can the wonderful people on this podcast find you on the interwebs?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter, _JordanSaeed. I'm kind of active on both, really active on both. You can find me on Facebook as well, Jordan Saeed. Do I have anything else? No, I don't. Yeah, those are the only three things you can find me on.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I'm not on TikTok just yet. It'll come, I'm sure.
Brilliant stuff. Excellent stuff. Jordan, my friend, thank you so much for your time. It has been a pleasure catching up, and I hope to see you very soon at some wrestling shows.
Thank you.
How about that, ladies and gentlemen? This is another episode in the can with the wonderful Jordan Saeed this week. Now, Jordan's an interesting character, and it's very interesting how he's come from being a police officer to being a wrestler. But they always say if your heart is it, that the heart gets what the heart wants and desires. And if your passion is in wrestling, there's nothing else that's going to fulfill that for you. So I'm really pleased that he was able to, you know, make that transition into being a wrestler and a PT now, and he's doing what he loves. And I'm very interested to see how his career will develop out on his own and with a tag team with RJ Singh, who obviously you listened to last week's episode and heard all about his journey and how much of a journeyman he is. So I'm going to let you all go. Keep an eye on the old social medias. I will tell you who we have on next week for the Suplex podcast on social medias. And until then, have a great week. Stay safe. And I will see you all next week for another edition of the Suplex podcast.